Now, I'm delighted to welcome my next guest into studio. He is Tarbert man Paddy Creedon. Now, Paddy has spoken to us on the show a few times in the past, but it's a few years since he was last in studio for a chat, and we're always happy to see him. Welcome, Paddy.
Thanks very much, Deirdre. Thank you.
You're here to tell us about the launch of your new poetry book, which is called No Small Talk, and that is taking place this Saturday at Tarbert Community Centre. This isn't your first rodeo, as they say. You've written quite a few books.
This is the fourth, I suppose, in this kind of series where we've written around mental health and addiction recovery issues, and all the proceeds go to the Rise Foundation, which is a foundation that looks after the families of people who have loved ones in addiction.
Okay. And just a little bit for people, of course, I know your story because I've spoken to you before, but for people who don't know anything about you, could you give us a little bit of background into your own life and how you got interested?
Sure, of course. Yeah. First of all, I was born in Tarbert, right? And back in 1950, so that brings me up to 75 this year, or gone past, what am I saying? Left it, hadn't picked up a drink by 1969, right, when I went to work in Dublin. And I kind of got fond of gambling, right, in my own kind of history, right? And then coming out of Shelbourne Park one night without any money and broke on a Saturday night with my future wife, we decided we better give up the gambling and maybe substitute it with the alcohol for a while, that we might get a better return. So that was the story when my drinking started, right? My first drink was in the Wynn's Hotel in Dublin, right? And I always say this to people, that what differentiates us sometimes from normal drinkers or heavy drinkers or whatever is that when we take our first drink, it transforms us completely. So we get away from the fears and all the stuff that we had that's going on underneath, and we just love that instant buzz.
Yeah.
So, and that lasted for a while. And when I say a while, probably 2 years out of that. Next 3 years were problematic. And the last 2 years of my drinking were as described by a medical consultant in Baggot Street Hospital as chronic alcoholism. Yeah. So I ended up at the age of 27, you know, married, one child, and in real trouble from drink. I had a good employer. They kept me on board, and I eventually got my stuff together, as they say, and I'm in recovery ever since. That's
never touched a drop in all.
No, not since November 77. Yeah, was my last drink.
That's incredible. So the whole thing happened within a very short space.
It did.
Of time.
Yeah, and I think that's, I suppose, I'm lucky number one. That's for sure, right? But it also proves, Deirdre, that the length of time isn't, you know, is not necessarily an indicator of your level of problematic drinking or alcohol use disorder, as we call it nowadays, you know. So all of that, yeah. So I'm just one of those people that's, you know, most of the time very happy and buzzy and want to promote. I'm a recovery advocate now, you know. I'm retired really from any kind of work, and I spend all my day literally research on addiction and research on trauma, really, because they're both interlinked. And trying to get people into recovery.
And helping people.
Yeah, basically just trying to get people who need help and want help into recovery. And there's terrific recovery opportunities now, yeah.
Yeah, and like you've learned a lot about the brain and addiction.
Of course. Yeah, so you're like as I said, that company I worked for, VHI in Dublin, right? They were terrific because they sent me back to college and everything, you know, and gave me my first break in a promotion, all of that kind of stuff. But so then I went back and did the stuff, and I then eventually was working in an addiction facility in Brussels when I gave up with VHI after 30 years. I went back to college there and began to learn really about what's underneath the bonnet of all this stuff, you know, and then linked that to some personal trauma stories and trauma in my own case. Intergenerational trauma is the subject matter I love now, yeah.
Yeah, okay, that's really, really interesting. And I know I'm going off on a bit of a tangent, and I will come back to the book in a moment, but do you think that, and you've studied this obviously, Paddy, that some people are more predisposed to becoming addicted quicker than others, or is that a myth?
I think they're still, even with all the evidence, right? So I come from both my grandparents and my parents both sets of grandparents never drank.
As was the way.
Oh, absolutely,
back then,
at the time, yeah. Right? Did they have their own? Yeah, they had, you know, like in terms of we were strictly brought up and all that, right? But my parents were very loving parents, you know, but they were of their time. My mother used to say to me, why don't you just take the Pioneer Pledge, you know what I mean? I don't think that's ever been proven. That, you know, I think that there's definitely a link between trauma, for sure, for those of us, you know, that's coming up more and more, both oppression as a community. Like, Ireland has a phenomenal story. If you take the 800 years of oppression, then the famine. Then the war of
the church.
Oh my God. Like, and do you know the sad thing, really, Deirdre, and the stuff I'm into nowadays in terms of finding out why the oppressed became the oppressor?
Okay.
Do you know? And I think what happened with us then, do you know, about when I say intergenerational trauma, so people passed on their own stresses and their anxieties, really. Do you know that they didn't know they were passing on, right? And those of us who picked up the drink or the gambling or whatever were the people who actually found a way out of that temporarily.
Okay.
So that would be my experience, and would be certainly a lot of research around nowadays, right? That wasn't there before. Like, trauma is only in the last 25, 30 years becoming a thing, of course. Now, not everybody that's traumatized becomes alcoholic, right?
Okay.
That's for sure. Do you know, there are various types of traumas and all of that. But a lot of people who I find, and I manage treatment centers, you know, in my recovery, I find that a lot of people who don't get into recovery have unresolved traumas.
Okay.
If you don't deal with both concurrently almost nowadays, you're going to end up really struggling with your addiction, yeah.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
It does, absolutely. And are you, like, in terms of the amount of people coming forward, like, is there any slowing down of it?
No. Like, if you look at the big numbers pictures, right? So in Ireland, just taking Ireland alone, all the figures saying, there's some really good research now from the Health Research Board. The ones I'm really, so 500,000 people have an alcohol use disorder in Ireland. So 500,000, about 576,000, which means that can be mild, moderate or severe. 90,000 are severe. So they're the figures. So I was in the severe category. Couldn't stop drinking once I started, no matter what the situation was at home or where my responsibilities. I'm just trying to get the 90,000 to face up to, because life in recovery is good. It's not a sentence or anything. You know what I mean? It's a freedom, really.
Yeah.
So, and you asked me, I see an awful lot of new people coming into recovery at every level, younger people. In the recovery programs that I'm still very actively involved in, it's now 50-50 in relation to gender.
Yeah.
Which is great, really, do you know? So that's changed. The average age is way down. So people are coming forward in their 20s. There are good facilities in Ireland. There's good facilities in Kerry, do you know? So there's no shortage of
help out there, only to access
it and get people to encourage people to do that. Yeah.
What do you make of the generation coming up now, Paddy? They don't seem... No, I know this is a generalisation, but generally speaking, and there are stats to back this up, they don't seem to feel the need to go out and get plastered every weekend like my generation did.
Sure, and mine, yeah, sure.
What is that? Have we recovered it? You mentioned the psyche we have as Irish people and oppression and all of that.
Yeah.
Are the generation coming up now free of all that?
Yeah, I think education has a huge amount of role in that. Like, if you look at... You know, even take the last 100 years, right? You know, so now everybody has an opportunity to be educated right up to third level if they want to be. Fantastic, right? Which wasn't there before. You know, are the younger people today, I think there's greater awareness, greater involvement in sport. There are still huge issues with underage drinking. There are still huge issues with 16 to 18 year olds in drinking. A lot of people work their way through that, right? I see a lot on the other end now who are coming into treatment. So, like, in their early 20s, So on the treatment side, that, you know, this, I think what it is really, Deirdre, that the 10% of the people who drink will always end up with an alcohol use disorder. And what we're trying to do, if you can imagine, if you can get the intervention done earlier, so there's much more awareness at school, much more awareness with people putting their hands up earlier, right? I do see a huge change, all right, in that group, that big cohort of group, that group. If you're into sport, or you're into your singing or music or art, right, where in my generation, drink came first, changed altogether now.
Yeah.
Which is great. There's a great sense of maturity, right? So that's what... Yeah, so
and more of an interest in their health and their fitness.
Health and fitness, yeah, absolutely. And if you even take the numbers of, like, if you take the, you know, in my generation, women never played football. Now, it's fantastic, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? Like, it's, and not alone that, but you go to Croke Park and you see mothers bringing their daughters, right, and their sons, right? But where that never happened in the 1950s or 60s or 70s, right? So now that's all changed. More participation, including my local club in Taberton. Do you know what I mean? So, yeah, great.
It's great, yeah.
It's absolutely terrific, yeah.
So much has changed even in my lifetime. I mean, I'm 58 and the social changes have been massive, and I'm really interested in the whole thing about alcohol and young people and that. Mm. But listen, I went off on a tangent because you're always so interesting to talk to about these things. You've written quite a few books. This one, No Small Talk, it's a collection of poems. Where did the title come from?
Title came from the poem. There is a poem in it in the called No Small Talk, right? And the two characters in that poem are people who met in a restaurant didn't quite know why they were meeting, really. And very early on in the conversation, it became very clear that both were coming from out of dealing with one, in one case, their own addiction, like myself, and the other person having worked through a really difficult family situation where they were the, survivors of a lot of alcohol and alcohol abuse in the home. And that came up. And there was, you know, when you go into a restaurant and sometimes you're full of all small talk, right? But there's a line that says there was no time for small talk or...
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. But, you know, I'd love to read a few, but it's not... I, there's a nicer poem about Kerry connections in this book, right?
Absolutely. And there's lovely pictures in this as well. Who are the pictures by?
The pictures are by... Some of them are my own, right? Again, in all of my books, I always found that if you... Going back to the very first one I did with Olive Stack, right? From Miss Stoll, right? When she produced the images, if they can be put side by side with the poems, make the message...
More powerful.
In this case, I work with a woman, Denise Costa, who's from Brazil and is living in Brazil for the last 3.5-4 years. We worked together in Dublin in a technology company, but our interest grew when Denise went and studied psychology herself, and we would be joint researchers around trauma and intergenerational trauma.
Okay.
So that's where that, and so in some of the, she has produced some of the images, I've produced some of them, yeah, so.
And
she also has a fantastic poem in it herself, her first ever called Feminine, which is, I know you'll like it, right, when you get to read it there.
I will get to read it. I'm just reading the press release about it. Mm-hmm. You say this book, it features conversations around recovery, emotional resilience and the quiet battles people fight behind closed doors.
Yeah, that's for
what
sure.
What do you mean by that?
I think, you know, when we come into recovery, right, so I'm talking about particularly people like me and so our life is in chaos. Chaos, absolute total chaos, right? No money at home, you know, people leaving, all that. In my case, I tell my story about my eldest lad was only 2 years of age and he had an influence in me coming into recovery. But it was chaotic. So your emotions are absolutely nullified. There's no other thought in your head or the next drink. The next drink, will I be able to control it? How can I control it? I won't make a fool of myself. I'll do all of that. So that battle, all of a sudden you put down the alcohol, you come into recovery, whether it's through a treatment centre or through one of the 12-step programs, and then you're faced with reality. And the battle really begins, you know, and without help. That's why I say about the book is trying to pull together the addiction recovery, the trauma resolution, which is all facilitated by trusted connections.
Okay. It's going to be launched this weekend. Is it Jimmy Dean Hennessy?
Yeah, Jimmy Dean on the Kerry side, yeah. We are delighted with Jimmy, yeah, of course, yeah. He's doing that in Talbot tomorrow night at 7.
Yeah, and Jimmy loves anything literary. He's a great supporter of the arts.
Sure, yeah, of course, yeah.
To be fair to him. You're going to read us one poem, which is from this collection, which is called Time. Can you fill me in
a bit of background? Yeah, sure, yeah. Of course. So I work with, when I say I work beside, there's a musical couple in Belfast called Celtic Grace, Eileen Beamish and David Williams, husband and wife. Eileen plays the harp, David plays the flute, and we, for the last, met Eileen in a treat when she came into a treatment to talk and sing to patients. So ever since, we've been doing this idea of narrating poetry, playing the music, matching music with poems, and we've been, so for the last couple of years we were invited down to the Kerry Mental Health Fest, and we're back again this year in October the 10th, right, down in Castlemaine. And so we'll do similar kind of programmes. And last year we were invited into the two primary schools.
In Castlemaine,
yeah. I think it's Kiltalla and St. Joseph's, right? To try something. We tried it before once or twice, which was really to talk to, this is the first time with primary pupils, right, primary school pupils. So you can imagine 9 to 12 year olds, that kind of group, sitting around a table. We play a couple of games around poetry. One is write your own haiku, which is, we give you the first line, you do the other two. And then we do this idea of a poetry jigsaw. So we cut out the lines of a poem and the group work together to try and put it back together.
That's lovely.
So that goes down well. And the last thing we do is we give a line, right? In this case, it was the first line of a song by Beyoncé.
Right? Okay.
Which is not my. Somebody suggested this to me now. Like, I didn't kind of come up with this myself.
You wouldn't
right?
strike me as a Beyoncé.
No,
fan.
I don't think so, no. I don't think I'd recognise her in the street.
if she walked down the street.
No, Darbert, I don't think so. But anyway, she has a beautiful line in one of her songs, which says, I wanna leave my footprints in the sands of time. Right. And somebody said, well, we'll try that, right? So what the idea is that that's the first line. So we're sitting around the table. I think there's 24 in total involved in this, right, between the two schools. So it would be maybe 12 in one school, 12 in another, around the table like this. So I'm here, and that's the first line. And I pass that to the next person beside me, and they write their line based on the line they see. Once they've completed it, right, they turn over the line, and all you're left with. So as it goes around the room, you only see one line.
One line, the one before you.
Yeah, which is really, in creative writing, it's a good exercise that we often use in creating writing groups to get our creative things going, you know.
So. Okay. So anyway,
this is
a collaborative.
And it was fantastically well done, I must say. And the music helped that day, right? You know, so we were playing music with the harp and the flute at the same time, right? So it... anyway, will I give this a go?
Do.
Time, co-created with Celtic Grace and the pupils of Castlemaine National School, Kiltalla and St. Joseph's. I want to leave my footprints in the sands of time, footprints that will last forever, forever. So we can live now and have stuff to remember. Like how the sand between our feet feels, like when I tore up Croke Park with my heels, my black and red car like a shooting star, my green and yellow star shines bright in the sky, the sea shines into the light, in the big evening sun, the day is nearly done. I want to leave my footprints in the sands of time, to walk to the sea where the ocean lays, to be where Mother Lisa rose near the trees, near the wonderful things in life, like the birds and the bees. Where we go on sunny holidays, where the weather is nice, we will meet and be friends for life. I can read the last one if you like.
I think we're gone a little bit over
okay.
time.
Anyway, that's all written by 9 to 12 year olds down in Castlemaine last October.
Sure, isn't that fantastic? And it's one of the books contained in the book, or one of the poems contained in the book, No Small Talk, Addiction Recovery, Trauma Resolution, Trusted Connections by Paddy Creedon and Denise Costa. And it's being launched this Saturday at 7 p.m. in Tarbert Community Centre.
Absolutely, yeah.
Paddy, Always a pleasure.
Thanks, Deirdre, and always, and likewise. Thank you so
having
much.
Having you on the show, and good luck with the book, and keep up the good work as
thank
well.
You. Thank you very much.
We'll take a break.